Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G. We are back, as we do every Monday, at 11 o'clock, regardless if it's Freedom Day, regular day, holiday, public holiday, whatever it is. We are here and we discuss anything that will help us influence ourselves to be better people. What can we learn to influence ourselves, our families, our communities, just be the people we want to be, living in the world we want to live in? And today we have a very important discussion, and that is regarding learning, schools, anything in that space, different styles, changes that we're looking at from the traditional learning. Maybe when we were in school, it was a bit different than what we're watching our kids do. So anything about that, learning styles, differences, things that we need to adapt to, things we've already adopted to, etc., all going to be happening today with three top psychologists in their field, in that specifically learning area. Just a thought I was having as I was walking up the steps to the studio, a lot of steps and a lot of thoughts, quite a boring journey. We're celebrating today Freedom Day. And maybe we should look at it more as Responsibility Day. Maybe the idea of a democracy should give us not only freedom, but should also give us the responsibility. If we're going to vote to people, then think about it seriously. And if we're going to see what's good for our future, we must be responsible for our future and not only have the privileges of it, but also responsibilities with that. I don't know what your thoughts are, but you could send us your thoughts about that. Or not, it's holiday, chill, don't worry about that. Okay, let's get to know our guest today. I'm going to say firstly, good morning to Anne Jenks and Jack, right? And you are a psychologist in private practice. Okay. Introduce yourself for in case any of our listeners have not heard you yet or know about you.
I'm Anne Jenks. I've been in practice for over 30 years. I work mostly with children and, of course, parents and families. And over a long period of time, I've kind of specialized in doing social skills groups with children on the autistic spectrum, as well as children who have attention difficulties or any other kind of social difficulties.
Okay, and today we live in a world that maybe we all need extra help when it comes to social interactions, but we'll get there and we'll see. Good morning to Vanessa Trackman.
Hi.
Introduce yourself.
So I am a psychologist. I work at King David Lingsfield High School, assisting the students with who have barriers to learning, the more mainstream students, you know, providing them with support, understanding, and exactly like what you had said earlier, is figuring out ways that they can maximize or become more optimal for learning.
Okay. And good morning to our third psychologist here in our discussion. Good morning to Haley Swartz.
Good morning.
Okay, introduce yourself.
So I have the privilege of working with Vanessa at the high school and
King David Lingsfield,
yeah. Yes. And what we do is we try to help and support the kids. And my interest has always been in the learning area and the neurodiverse children as well. And I've gone in a bit more of the neuropsychology route to get a bit of a deeper understanding. And yeah, but it's nice working in that multiple team with Vanessa's because we've got all those different viewpoints.
Okay. Yeah. Amazing. So let's start with the simple questions. You know, you've all been in practice for quite a few years, and I'll start with you. What changed? Why do we need alternative ways? Why is the world different? Are the students different? Are we different?
Because I think children are different. I mean, the world is a very different world from when I grew up. And some children need a specific way of learning that doesn't happen in sort of a mainstream way. So one just has to do things a little bit differently at times.
So when you say different ways that are not happening in mainstream, for example, what are the academic areas or work or skills?
Well, you know, so for example, with children who are on the autistic spectrum, they do think differently. Okay. They don't understand very well the abstractions, but they understand concrete, and they understand specific.
So you might say to them as a teacher, pick up your pencil. Let's say they're writing an exam.
Okay.
And the invigilator says, turn over the page. Well, to me, turn over the page means turn over the page, pick up your pencil and start writing. And the kid doesn't. He turns over the page. And then the teacher says, well, what are you doing? And the kid seems as though they're oppositional, but they didn't understand that you're supposed to turn over the page, pick up a pencil, and start writing. We weren't specific enough.
So you're talking about the teachers needing to know that the child doesn't have the context, or actually teaching how to pick up context to the children?
Exactly, yes.
Both?
Yes.
Okay. So you're talking about academic tools and ways to learn that are not provided in mainstream school. Yet we're sitting here with psychologists. I want to hear from your side that you're saying you are in the mainstream school system, yet you're supporting alternative academic ways in the mainstream school. And I'll stay with you.
I'm not saying that it isn't provided in the mainstream school, but it isn't provided normally. So the teacher needs to become aware of how she needs to be a little bit different.
We'll get to that, because that is the shift that we're seeing over the past few years. You know, when I started the show about a decade ago, we were always complaining about how schools for the past 100 years are copy-paste, and they need a change, and we need a change. And I actually have seen in the past few years that we are changing, and things are happening differently, and it's actually quite impressive to see what's happening in the schools. So, you know, I'll ask you, Vanessa, how many years are you in this position? Range, you don't have to say exactly.
So probably about 6 years. Before that, I was in private practice. Okay. So for about 20 years in total.
What are the shifts that you're seeing over 6 years in the school and the mainstream system?
I think what, for me, what really, really stands out is that the demands that are placed on the children seem to be escalating. And again, not every child fits into the same box, and children do learn differently. And the school system needs to be able to accommodate that, to allow for that sort of flexibility for children to learn the best way that they can. I think that it's incredibly difficult for some. Not everybody is, you know, goes to school, learns, gets it. They need assistance. And that, I think, is the school's responsibility to be able to offer that flexibility and teach different kinds of strategies and tap into where their strengths are and not try and train them in one direction or one size fits all, because it's
isn't. Very surprising that I didn't expect you to say that the demands are escalating. Mm-hmm. I actually would say, and people would argue, that the schools are becoming much more flexible and much more open and not escalating their demands, yet being more accommodating. Mm-hmm. In what way do you feel that the demands are actually escalating?
I think that the demands are escalating in what's required from children. So it's not just about learning, testing, answering questions, about developing soft skills. It's about being prepared for the world out there, because that is what's changing. And, you know, problem-solving skills, things like that. So it's not just about the context or the syllabus. It's about sort of broadening it to incorporate those kinds of skills into the way that a child learns. So the demands, I suppose, also about the demands or the expectations once they've completed their schooling and they go out into the big world.
To actually prepare them for life. Yeah. So we do need to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue in this discussion.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, and we're here in an important discussion, I'd say, with three psychologists in the educational field, with Ann Jack, with Haley Swartz, and with Vanessa Trackman. Haley, I'm going to start with you after this break and say, you know, Vanessa mentioned about the escalation in demands and needs. And I'm wondering if it's also to do with a lot of things that we're teaching kids today that in the past they naturally picked up. For example, Anne is working on social skills with kids, and for kids that are not necessarily picking it up, and we're seeing a consistent decrease in natural social connections and communications. Is that something that is kind of shifting into the curriculum?
So it is, in a way, with the life orientation subjects, you know, with daily tasks or consumers where they're going with household things. Those are the more concrete. But with regards to technology and with social aspects, I think today there is more of a understanding of the different learning styles, the different learning difficulties. And so they try integrate that as much as possible, whereas in the past, there wasn't that kind of understanding. So those kids may have fallen behind or were not really integrated as much into the system. With today, with technology advancing as it is, what I can understand that there is a need for more social skills to be taught, because this is now becoming all-encompassing in a child's life where they have screens everywhere. So they're not really learning one-on-one people skills. It's very, very different online. And what one has to remember also is just taking a step back from all of that is the human brain hasn't really, we still have the same human brain. So when Anne was speaking about how the you know, things are changing and the different, like with the children on the autism spectrum, they're needing to learn those, they're needing to learn the social skills. What we forget is that when we were back, let's say, in caveman days, right, our brain's still structured for that time. It still has the same abilities. Learning language, learning how to socialize is more of a societal construct where we taught it, in fact. So when we see those things play out in schools is that it's actually more abstract things that the child needs to start integrating into their lives. Where before, when we didn't have the technology, the children were interacting more. It was more, it wasn't stuff that needs to be learned as much. We're living in more of a cyber world that doesn't come naturally. And so the brain has to adapt that way.
Right. So then when we look at the school role in general, okay, we started off schools probably 200 years ago, plus minus, depends on what country. And at that time, human communication and skills were quite developed. Families, parents were teaching their kids were running around, going to playgrounds, getting connecting, etc. But academics and information and knowledge was absent, and that's where the schools came in. Now that we live in a world that information is out there, and any child who wants to search any information could very fast find very good and easy access to knowledge and information, what is lacking is a social communication. What is lacking is leadership, responsibility, looking up to people, connecting to people. Is the school system, and specifically your role as psychologist in schools, to take and to lead that shift into teaching life skills that used to be natural and letting go a bit of the knowledge, because we'll find the knowledge?
I think it also depends on the different type of schools. Like if you're looking in the mainstream school, I know from our high school, there's different clubs and things that the children after extramurals that the kids are, we encourage them to be participate in. So they do try and get those skills there. But with regards to the syllabus, it's still the subject, so we can't really integrate the social skills there. But if they do need to come speak to us from a counseling point or emotional point, we do offer that help to them. Yeah.
Yep. My question is why? Why is the syllabus still stuck? And I know the I understand that there's a law and there's government and there's the IB and everything. Mm. But putting that aside, Furman, because if we're going to look at the movement from our side as a community, as people, why is the syllabus still so fixated on the academics? And when it comes to any extra skills, we refer to it as extramurals, extra skills, added stuff, when in reality it's as important, if not more. Vanessa.
So I think, I mean, just going back to your question, you know, what is the school's role in all of this? I think there is a responsibility from the school to actually move and to help those children shift into a different way of learning. The focus, I think, you know, if you think about it, there's the goal And there's how do you need to get there? The goal, broadly in community perspective, is still the same. Children have to achieve, they have to get their matric, etc. But what we can tweak and change is the journey of how they actually get there. So I was having a conversation with a colleague of mine in terms of, you know, a fish has to learn to climb a tree, in a sense. So right. We're not saying that we can take that away, but it's how the fish gets to the top of the tree, in a sense, where there could be all those difficulties, but what can we do to support, or what skills can we give to make that journey, you know, a little bit easier? And I think...
But we're still not changing the concept of a fish climbing up a tree.
No,
we're just saying, okay, what are we going to... What support system are we going to give the fish to climb up a tree?
Yes.
Okay.
So at our school, in terms of the different subjects that are offered, we've moved away a little bit from your 13 subjects in grade 8, touching on little bits of content, rather than moving to, we call it an elective system. So they do a subject, but in that subject, they also attain skills. So for example, if it's like a consumer's, they learn to bake something, they learn to understand what is the dietary requirements, they package it, they market it, they then sell it. So it's not only learning the content of what's required or to prepare them for their final IEB, but all the other skills that they're equipped with in doing so. So I think from that perspective, we have shifted a little bit and are much more flexible, but still understanding that there are demands and that our children need to be prepared for what's out there, because the broader system hasn't changed.
The broader system, a day after matric, has changed. It's the matric that hasn't changed, meaning, yes, they still need all these academics for the matric, but a day after matric, sometimes knowing how to bake is more important than your diploma, because that will give you some kind of income or survival, while not always the diploma will help, etc. And I want to ask you from your side, you know, you speak about supporting socially kids that are on the spectrum and, you know, adding that extra value and need. What I'm wondering is that we're seeing a consistent growth in these skills lacking also in neurotypical kids, and also kids that are not on the spectrum, and also kids that are just growing up in a world of screens and connection and mass numbers of friends that you don't even know them. I one of my favorite quotes is I heard a young teenager asking their friend, how many of your friends do you know? Okay, and that's something that we never asked in school, because with your friends, you knew them. So in that world, is that not something that should be focused on, delivered, engaged with all students across the board?
Well, yes, it has to be with all students across the board, but we're forgetting about the family, and the parents are really important in all of this. I mean, if kids are on screens if the parents are on screens all the time, well, that's a problem. So, yes, the schools are adjusting in some ways, but parents also have to adjust, and there have to be limits and structure for the children to learn the skills that are required.
Okay. So there obviously is a responsibility laying on the parents.
100%.
Okay.
And the parents have to actually work together with the schools or a therapist, as the case may be.
Where is that engaging point? Let's talk about it, because we have two psychologists here from the school system that know the school system, but also have private practices. You're very big in private practice and lecture a lot in the school system also. So what is the engaging point between keeping a balance of what the parents should be taking on the responsibility and leading, and what the school should be, and how should they engage on it? And please don't tell me parents meeting once a year for a few minutes. Like, what is the actual connection?
You know, that's a difficult question for me to answer, but for sure the parents need to be involved in the academics and in what's going on in the schools and what's going on with their children. At the end of the day, the child is going to be at the school for 10 years, but the child's going to be in that parent's life for however long it is. So they have to work together with a team. And, I mean, I think King David's schools are amazing that they have this facility and this ability to connect and contact the parents. And as far as I remember, when I worked at King David for a while, that's what we do. We used to call the parents in and integrate them into their child's development.
What would be a recommendation, and I'll ask you guys, what would be a recommendation for parents that are hearing us to say, and say, well, we want to be more involved, but we don't want to, you know, step on the school's toes. We don't know what's our place, what's the school's place, where do we put that? What is the area that you say, no, come to the school, speak to us and do something? And what is the area you say, yeah, don't worry, we've got it. Don't helicopter your child, we're okay.
I think it's about open communication, and I think there has to be that line that is open all the time. So communication to the parents and from the parents back to the staff, whether it's the teacher, whether it's the counselor that's involved, to keep everybody on the same page. Because what happens is, and I think this is what Anne is saying, maybe in practice with families, is that you can work with a child as much as you can, but then the child goes back into a family setup, there needs to be changes there as well. So it's not about don't helicopter or don't, because, you know, sometimes parent like that because there's a particular reason for it. But work with the school, work with the guidance that's offered, with the support. It's not about kind of logging heads or making it into something that's unpleasant. It's if you have concerns, let us know. If we have concerns, you know, work with the families.
And the education that you are putting in, is there room or need or discussion about, because education for the parents, meaning I know that's happening a lot, that there is, you know, lectures and things that parents could learn. And as I said, I think and you do quite a bit of lecturing and talking and speak publicly. Yet it's not compulsory. And when we are sitting here and talking about the dangers of the screens and the challenges of you know, the social environments, what it's doing to our brains, and the dietary challenges that we're facing today, and all kinds of challenges that as professionals we know, maybe parents would love to know, but they don't know, and they're not getting that information. And just like for the kids, sometimes there are some compulsory requirements. I know this is a very big extreme, but every extreme starts in a discussion. Is there sometimes certain lectures or things that you would say this should be compulsory for parents to learn about?
Hey. Sure, that's a very broad
thing. Not trying to get you in trouble, I'm just saying.
Yeah. Okay. So there, with today's society, I think, if just off the top of my head, definitely technology, devices, screen time, how to be safe on that, I think is a huge thing. And also, it's very difficult, but for parents realizing, I think that their parenting can also be good enough. That, you know, as long as they're trying their best, and they, all the child wants really at the end of the day is to spend time with their parents, even with all these different things one has to look out for today.
I would say quality time, not time.
Yes.
Because time, we don't have that much, and it is where the guilt. And also, kids, I remember as a child, we don't really want to spend that much time, but we want the quality time and that connection.
Yeah. So, you know, there's all different things on that itself with spending time with your child. They want that connection. They just want to know they matter. But also, today, lifestyle has totally changed. Both parents need to work. It's a very fast pace. Culture, and so that's why I'm saying screen safety would be, I guess it's more safety things that I'm thinking of at the moment, as I think the children today, if I'm thinking of middle income houses, upper income, it's the child's being more left to their own devices in a sense, and they're a bit more neglected. So to me, I would say safety things, also body safety, going out in public safety, and also a bit more independence for learning as well.
Okay. So maybe let's touch on another topic that I think I'm wondering where we're at. You know, for obviously the schooling system is a very academic system, and we are very into academics, right? We grew up in generations that all of us wanted our children to be doctors and lawyers, and that's pretty much where it was. I mean, my grandfather, who came out of the Holocaust, survived, came to America, eventually found his mom, became a professor in for economy, got into very high positions in the U.S. At a very late age in life, his mother, I remember her saying, but I wish you were a doctor. And he said, but I am. I'm an economist and very famous in America. And she looks at him and she says, a real doctor. Okay, so we do have that concept in us. But are we putting emphasis and celebrating the kids that are not going to be doctors, but they could be amazing beauticians, amazing plumbers, amazing electricians that could make a good living, could be good family members, just work in blue-collar jobs, just work in that space? Is there room for them in the way we're building our future in the community? I'm going to let you guys choose who wants to take this one.
So from my side, from what I've seen some spaces opening up. For example, your school that you had. Mm-hmm. And I've seen there was an organization that actually, interestingly enough, came to talk at one of our assemblies recently. I think it was called Neshama, where they're trying to open those spaces for other children where they may have different needs compared to the majority.
But that's special needs and remedial. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people that are non-academics, that they're not special needs.
Yes. I've seen it at the high school from when I used to go there as well. I'm going to let Vanessa talk more about that. But I have noticed the difference from when I went to King David, because I attended there, to how it is structured now.
Okay. I'll just say, in that regard, sometimes I find myself paying plumbers more money per hour than I pay therapists.
Mm.
So there is a room that's needed. Unfortunately, that's a reality. But yeah, go ahead, Vanessa.
I think there's definitely more room for acceptance in terms of not necessarily pushing your children into those, we call them like umbrella careers, like you're either going into law or medicine or engineering, etc. There are about 8 or 9 of them. But it's definitely a process, I think, because sometimes parents do put expectations onto their children, which is really, really difficult. And it does, at the end of the day, also have to align in terms of their capabilities. And I think that if you start that process with parents, with families, in helping them understand that concept, that you don't have to be a doctor in a hospital to be successful and, you know, to achieve things. From our experience, we have had parents that do work towards an acceptance, and I don't say acceptance in a negative way, where the outcome for them is relief and you know, and still being proud of their children at the end of the day, you know, if they can reach their best potential.
To actually be very proud, and more of a discussion about that. Mm. We do need to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue on this a bit. And yes, I want to hear what you have to say. Short break, we'll be right back.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back in a very important discussion about the education of our next generation, future generations, the one who are going to be leading when we're going to be relaxing and chilling. And it's really up to us to give them what they need to grow. And right before the break, we were discussing the point of are we celebrating the non-typical jobs? Are we celebrating blue-collar work? Are we celebrating a child that will become a great plumber and we will be very proud and successful, or we're not geared towards that so much? And your thoughts?
I think very clearly that every person has their own limitations, be it neurodiversity, be it cerebral palsy, whatever it is. Everybody has limitations. And what we need to do as a community, as a therapist, as a family, as a parent, is to build the children to reach their potential within the limitation that they have, within the structure. To push a child into being a doctor when actually they're a brilliant technician or a brilliant electronics person is not terribly smart. I mean, what would have happened had Elon Musk been told you have to be a dietitian? Not that I don't like dietitians, but he wouldn't have been able to make the impact on the world that he has made. Even myself, I studied mathematics to begin with. I have a master's in mathematics. And mid mid-crisis age, I changed and became a psychologist because that was more where I needed to be. And I think it's really important that for parents and the schools to see the child, to see who they are, what they can do, and give them the acknowledgement and the input to be the best that they can be within the limitation that they have.
Amazing. And, you know, everybody speaks about the kinds, as you said, what would have happened to Elon Musk if he was a dietitian, etc. And I think we need to learn to read the story from the beginning, not from the end, because we're reading the end story. He's now Elon Musk, and then we're saying whatever. But I don't know how his teacher saw him 40 or 50 years ago. And sometimes we'll have a child that can be that very successful adult, but right now, in the beginning of the story, it's not as pretty as it is at the end of the story. So to be able to look at the beginning of the story as if we're seeing the end, I think is quite important, right? One of the people I was speaking to, she did very well in business, and her first business attempt or project failed completely. And I asked her, what held you through it? And she said, I was imagining how I'm giving a lecture after my big success, laughing about this incident, how I crashed my first one. And that became like a comedy thing and worked. So yeah, so going from there, you were going to say, Anne?
I forgot what I was going to say.
So I'm going to ask you, Andy, when it comes to success in school, or when it comes to what we want to achieve and want to grow, what are we actually trying to aim? You know, whenever we do something that we want to be successful in, we put our goals. What are our goals for school?
So I think, you know, we always look at results. And I think it needs to be changed the perspective to happiness. I know it sounds very strange, but we forget the emotional. All a person wants in their life is to feel seen, validated, and heard. And, you know, we're looking at those extreme examples like with Elon Musk and the successes with businesses. The thing is, yes, it's nice pat on the back, but at the same time, are the people really happy? Not all of us are going to get those huge results that they got. So you need to find something basically for your child that they would enjoy every day, that they would, you know, and that feeds into their soul and their emotional well-being as well, because, right, you know, every day is going to be difficult.
Where I see the challenge in that is, I'm going to connect to what Anne said about, you know, we all have our limitations, right? So we all have our limitations. We all have our talents. Yet certain talents, we as educators consider more important than other ones, right? Because if somebody is not good with academics, that's a learning disability. But if you've ever heard me sing, you're not going to say that I have a music disability, even though it probably is a disability, right? But music we don't consider as important enough that if somebody doesn't hold the key well, they have a disability. So why are we making certain categories that if you can't do it, it's a disability, and certain categories, you're just not good at it. It's fine. I'm not good at drama. I'm not good at music. No one calls it a disability.
I think it's because you need your core skills. Even with music, let's say, it's something you have a knack for, and then they'd go off into that. But you still need to learn your reading, your maths, because that plays into music.
Right, but I don't need my history for that.
No, but those, your core skills would play into history as well. You need those basics to go off into your interests.
I think that's a debate we need to have, because here, and I'm going to ask, and I'm with you on that fully, but I'm going to ask Vanessa in that regard, because, you know, we're in a very complicated situation. The work expectancy of people today is going to be at retiring at 70, the earliest, okay? So we take students that are going to be going into the working world for 50 years, and we are in a consistently changing world. We want them to choose subjects and professions that they can take for life, but we know that these professions are not necessarily going to be around for 50 years. What do we do in school today to teach them to adopt, to teach them to be successful even when their profession goes out of style or just is no longer needed? What are the core skills that will allow somebody to work with that?
So I think it's like what Haley said, it's a lot of focus is on results, but I think it's more about development in terms of yourself as an individual. The softer skills that I mentioned earlier, problem solving, emotional intelligence, that whether your career or your profession becomes redundant at some stage, but you have still developed as an individual and have developed skills in order to be successful in whatever direction that you go into. But I think what you're saying is that it's also about where can I be my best at the end of the day. All of us go to school, and there's not just it shouldn't just be one outcome. It should be, have you reached your potential, whatever that may be.
100%. So how do we create that feeling? I'm actually going to go back to Haley on that question. How do we create that feeling of success within the individual?
I think that really starts at home, to be honest. Yeah. We're very affected, even if we oppose our parents and it's conflict, we get the values and everything from our parents. And if our parents are, it's our main attachment figures, basically. If they're like, you know what, I see you loving this sport, we'll carry on with the sport. Just try as much as you can with maybe maths if that's not your thing. The child's going to be like, okay, it's not the end of the world if I do badly at maths. Mom can see I've got that strength over here. So I think it's a lot to do with their parents, their main support people.
Okay. It's that unconditional love regarding your child being there and supporting them even if they're not doing amazingly well. And at the same time, keeping that, I guess, motivating them as much as you can to do well, I think is a very difficult balance. Where would you take that at?
I would say that the parent's role actually is to give the child the feeling that they can do anything, even if they struggle in maths or whatever it is. It's the grit. It's that if you try something and you fail, you go back and you try again. That's what's important. That's how you learn. You learn academically, you learn personally, and you learn emotionally. And when you ask what can the school do, often I suggest to a parent when a child is struggling at school, give them a sense of success in anything. It doesn't matter what it is. Be karate, be tai chi, be taekwondo, whatever it is, that they get that confidence in themselves that they can try and they can learn and they can have an experience of success. Because then when they do the areas that are more difficult, they can know that, you know what, I have an acceptance and an acknowledgement from my parents that I am who I am, and there's some things I can do and some things I can't do. And I feel that too. I can feel that I'm different, that I can do some things and I can't do all things. That would be, for me, a very, very important position for an
educator
to take.
And I'll be happy with what I can do.
Yes.
Because the world can't have a world that everybody's the same, because then we won't have certain professions. So we need everybody to be different. And as Vanessa said, that mental state of addressing what am I good at, what can I, how do I adapt to that, I think is extremely important. I'll just add, and we'll go to a short break, is that we also need to be aware that when we are telling our children, and this is my opinion at least, that they can do anything, it needs to come with a question, but what are you doing now to get there? Yes, you can be the best doctor in the world and you're in fourth grade, but are you doing your academics today that will lead you to success? So we actually not only talk about it, but we actually do the work as we go and feel that success. But we'll take a short break and we will come back and start wrapping up towards the end of the hour.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back and we're actually wrapping up towards the end of this conversation. It's been very important, fascinating, and really appreciate the psychologist who came today on the show to join. And we're just going to end off with the normal last question we always have, and that is... the one question that I ask every guest here before we finish is, what do you wish and hope that we knew or did different for a better future? Vanessa, I'll start with you.
I think if we knew now what we knew then, you know, things, we could have changed things. I don't think we can focus on too much of what we could have done differently. I think it's about figuring out in going forward how we can adapt things and not focus too much on where we went wrong. I think for me, the biggest hope that I could wish for anyone in terms of being the best that they can be is being their best selves, and that the stakeholders or those that are involved in that process, the teachers, the parents, school principals, friends, etc., that everybody works towards building each other in the best way that they can.
Amazing. Accepting and being happy with that. And
so I think it's very important to realize that everybody's different and everybody has different skills and different abilities, and it's important to acknowledge that and give the person confidence to try to do what they can, and also to learn the parts that they can't. That's what they have to do.
Okay. And we're just going to have to wrap up and run quickly. Hayley?
I think the first word that came to mind was flexibility. Just flexibility and expectations of everyone, and our approaches to life. And I think that would make things a lot easier for a future. Yeah.
Definitely being able to adapt and being flexible. Amazing. Thank you so much for being with us today. So thank you again to Hayley Swartz, Vanessa Trackman, and Anne Jenks for being with us today on the show. All of you psychologists, some in private practice, some in school in King David. Really important. If you're just joining now or just here now, just go to our podcast. You'll hear it. It's a very important discussion. If you have children, you should be listening, and even grandchildren, but give them some space. And thank you to Senna for putting up these interviews in place. Thank you, Craig, for managing this show perfectly. And thank you to our listeners that are here week after week, every Monday, to another topic of growth and achievement. Stay well, enjoy your holidays, and we will be back next week. In the meantime, enjoy the other great shows of Chai FM. I'm sure there's so much and a lot you can enjoy. Stay safe, enjoy.